Hey, Through the Word, Peyton Jones here, and I'm here with Chris. I've been invited in to talk about the Esther 3 B-side. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Peyton. Thanks for taking the driver's seat on this one. What are we talking about on the B-side?
Well, Esther deals a lot with racism, anti-Semitism, and the challenge of applying these things to modern Israel for us as modern listeners. So, Chris, how does the book of Esther bring up these difficult topics?
I've been studying through Esther and seeing that there's going to be some challenges in dealing with a few things here. Haman feels slighted by Mordecai in our story, but he escalates that to a hatred for Mordecai's entire people. Clearly, there's an animosity already. This is deep-seated. It goes generations back. We're going to find out later that even without Haman, thousands, tens of thousands in the empire are gung-ho for his genocidal plot. The racism is already there. Racism is bad. We know that. Biblically, that's probably obvious to most of us. But the real question for us is, what does the Bible actually say to address racism? So we're going to talk through racism. We'll talk specifically about anti-Semitism. Where do we fit in? What viewpoint do we hold as Christians for all of this?
So the topic of racism is very relevant for us today. I mean, it's a big thing in the news. People get canceled over statements they make. And it's probably very obvious to all of us that racism is bad. But what does the Bible actually say, Chris, to address racism?
Well, we have quite a bit. Going back to the Old Testament for the Israelites, Exodus 23:9, a command to the Israelites, do not oppress a foreigner. You yourselves know how it feels to be foreigners because you were foreigners in Egypt. Powerful statement in the time where the Israelites were between slavery and going into the promised land. God gives them a reminder, hey, your dynamic's going to change. You're going to have your own homeland, but don't switch it up and oppress others. Always the foreigner is to be welcomed, loved, but at the same time, they're going to have issues with foreigners. In the much bigger picture of the whole Bible, God's big plan is unity and reconciliation. If you skip to the end, you see in Revelation 7:9, a view of heaven with a great multitude from every nation, tribe, people, and language standing before the throne, before the Lamb. Backing up a little bit to Ephesians 2, the work of the gospel, what Jesus accomplished, it says he himself is our peace. He's made the two groups one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility between us. Now, in that context, Paul is talking about a hostility that was between Jew and Gentile, those who drew near to God, that God had brought them in to be his people. The Gentiles were kept out, but Jesus came to make one new humanity, thus making peace. And it says there in Ephesians, he put to death their hostility. That's the bigger picture of God's plan. 2 Corinthians 5 reminds us that God gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That's a big deal. This is our calling. This is what it is to be Christian. We reconcile people to God, but in the process of that, we also reconcile people to each other. Because 1 John reminds us that if you claim to love God but hate your brother, you got it all wrong. So our ministry of reconciliation for others affects our relationship with each other. And the big result of that, both Galatians 3 and Colossians 3 have these beautiful statements of, as we are in Christ, there's neither Jew nor Gentile, neither circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. In the Colossians 3 passage, Colossians 3:11, neither Jew nor Gentile, he adds in some other racial divisions, the barbarian and the Scythian, and the divisions of status, the economic divisions, and slave or free. He adds male and female in the Galatians 3 passage. God is in the work of reconciling and bringing unity. So that's the big picture we're aiming for. But we live in the reality of the present. We live in the midst of things. That's why it's our calling. It's our ministry. It's an important ministry, but it's a difficult ministry.
That's good. I like that. What about anti-Semitism? There's a lot of that in the book of Esther. Should we look at anti-Semitism any differently from any other type of racism?
So anti-Semitism is hatred specifically towards Jews. Semite meaning the Jews Abraham descended from, Shem. So I would say yes and no. Hatred of the Jews is a form of racism in that it's a hatred of one ethnic group or people. So in that way, our view is the same. It's wrong. God came to bring reconciliation. We want to bring peace. We want to end racism. However, there is a difference even to this day because God made a covenant with Abraham and the Jewish people carry that covenant. Genesis 12:3, I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. All the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. So that covenant changes the dynamics of anti-Semitism, this particular racism, because God promised Abraham unconditionally. And the promise is sort of a, I got your back. Now, it's important to look at this carefully, at what it does say and what it doesn't say. Does that covenant mean that God is always on Israel's side in any conflict? No, doesn't actually say that. In fact, we have a great insight in Joshua 5:13. If you remember the Joshua story, Joshua goes to the side, he sees this, they're preparing for battle, and there's this angelic warrior. And Joshua asks, are you for us or for our enemies? Neither, he replied, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. And that's a beautiful picture there. He says, hey, you're on our side, you're on their side. And the angelic warrior, who I believe to actually be the Lord showing up, says, neither. It doesn't work that way. It's not about taking sides or about God taking our side. Does that covenant mean that God will ensure Israel automatically wins any conflict or is right in any conflict? The unconditional covenant with Abraham doesn't promise anything about conflict. It doesn't bring that up. All of that comes in the Mosaic covenant, which is the law. So Deuteronomy 28, if you fully obey the Lord your God and carefully follow all his commands, then you'll have many blessings and your enemies will flee in all directions. However, it goes on to say, if you do not obey the Lord, then there are just as many cursings and you will flee in all directions. So it's a conditional covenant, and the Israelites in exile here in Esther is God coming through on that second part of the covenant. So the key for us there, God did not give ancient Israel a free pass from right and wrong in conflict. Quite the contrary, the law bound them to do right or face the consequences. And yet the promise from Abraham still stands. Those who curse you, I will curse. So which covenant will stand above? That's going to be a key plot line in Esther. So stay tuned for that one. Both covenants will come into play. In the story, the ancient Israelites are in exile for the very reason that they did wrong. They disobeyed God. Their land was full of violence. So is God now against them or is there hope? That's what we're going to watch for in the book of Esther.
That's really good. Now, obviously in history, there's been a long record of racism, specifically anti-Semitism. Why do people always target the Jews?
Now, this is a good and poignant question. There's pogroms, there's the Holocaust. That's all just in the last century. This has gone on for millennia. I think the Holocaust demonstrated a level of coordinated cruelty and evil with this one particular racism that forces you to question, what is behind this one? All racism is bad and the acts inspired are very bad, but the level of inhumanity stands out. There are many reasons that people give as theories or excuses for anti-Semitism. You can find all this stuff online. There's the racial theory. It's just their race. Economic theory. Jews have too much wealth and power, and they blame that for their hatred against them. The outsiders theory, they're just different. The scapegoat theory, they get blamed for the world's problems. The deicide theory, blamed for killing Jesus. The chosen people theory, all of those are pretty easily debunked as excuses, and there is no valid excuse for such hatred. Making excuse doesn't make anything right. But I believe the real explanation, rather than excuse, is that there is a spiritual battle behind it. The principalities and powers of Satan work against God's plan and God's people. Now, I believe spiritual forces of evil rally behind racist hatred in many forms, and inhumane acts are common across the board. But there is a concentration of that evil power rallied against the Jews. The Bible only gives us glimpses into the nature of that spiritual battle, but consider the story here in Esther. the Israelites are exiled in the Persian Empire. Daniel 10, backing up just a couple generations, tells us of an angel appearing to Daniel, saying he battled the prince of Persia, who's a demon power, for 21 days, and his help was from Michael the archangel assigned to defend Israel in spiritual battle. Now, it's just a tiny glimpse, and I think it's dangerous to conjecture and invent details of spiritual battle that aren't written. But the battle is clearly there. Daniel is just a couple generations ahead of Esther, and I believe the same spiritual battle behind the scenes here in Esther is inspiring Haman to this genocidal edict and the tens of thousands who support him to carry it out. And then fast forwarding to the New Testament, Revelation 12 gives us this vision of the dragon representing Satan making war against the child, who is Jesus, and against the child's mother, that's Israel. That picture of spiritual war of Satan coming against both Jesus and the mother is a picture for us of the world coming against both the Israelites and the Christians. It's all part of a complex spiritual battle.
So what do we do with all this? How do we apply what the Bible tells us about racism and anti-Semitism?
Well, I think we bring a few things away from it. The Exodus 23:9 still applies to us. Do not oppress a foreigner. The Bible is consistently against oppression. The Bible consistently speaks up for the marginalized, and we need to carry that banner. Also, we are given a ministry of reconciliation. This is a part of our place in the world. It's what we're here for. And third, I think our battle is real, but we have to be reminded that it is not against flesh and blood. Now, that's a radical perspective shift. I picture it like this. Before we know Jesus, we're all caught up in the midst of the battle. People hate each other. People hate us. We hate others, all in varying degrees. Some hate more than others. Some, like the younger me, like to hug the sidelines, hoping to just avoid conflict. Then Jesus shows up in my life and the blindfold is removed. The wall of hostility comes down. I'm reconciled to God, but the battle still rages on. The world is the same, but I'm different. And I realize all this time I've been fighting the wrong enemy. And even while they're still attacking me, and oftentimes more so now, I must choose to recognize our battle is not against flesh and blood, and I must take up different weapons. Our weapons are not like the weapons of the world. We demolish arguments and strongholds that stand against the knowledge of God. I'm in a different battle now, and I have to fight in accordance with that.
All right. Well, hey, guys, I want to thank you for joining us for this B-side and going into a deeper dive of a very important issue. And we'll see you next time on our journey through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.